So I'd like to welcome you to the meeting of the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee. Vicki, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athus?
Here.
Trustee John Butler?
Here.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Bob Pritchard? Trustee Madeline Marchand?
Here.
Board Chair Dennis Burcima? Committee Chair Eric Wazowitz?
Here. And here.
You're going pretty quick, sorry.
We're running late.
I'm a little sleeping switch there.
And I'd also like to show that Trustee Pritchard is now joining us as well. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum and that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Yes, Mr. Chair, a quorum is present and appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Public Meetings Act.
Thank you. You have before you the meeting agenda, and I'd like to have a motion to amend the agenda. We are going to move up item 7C to 7A. So if you just go down a little bit further there on the screen, you'll see that there's a C. So we're going to move up. The motion is to, I'd like to hear a motion on moving the series bond reissuance update from C to A. May I hear a motion on that?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Let's see here. So now we can keep going here. Now, may I have a motion to approve the amended agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting of August 15, 2019?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. I also like to make note that Trustee Herrero has now joined us. So this is an opportunity for me to make comments, and I'd like to comment about the Holmes Student Center remodel. The completely remodeled ground floor of the Holmes Student Center has been open for about 3 weeks now. And I'm happy to say that it is already fulfilling its mission as a central location on campus where students, faculty, and staff are excited to come together. Also, I think the NIU letters that we have between the library and the student center has now become a main photo attraction as well. The new facilities officially opened on October 26th, and I would make note that that was just before homecoming, so well-timed. And as a part of the homecoming activities, and the alumni gave it rave reviews. Students have quickly discovered the space the following Monday, and the crowds at Starbucks, like Dennis mentioned before, the new Depot grab-and-go convenience store and Husky Books and Gear have been growing ever since. So I'd like to publicly thank and commend the NIU team responsible for the Holmes Student Center project. President Freeman, for your leadership and commitment to this initiative. John Heckman, I know that you worked tirelessly on this. Belinda Roller did some great things. Kelly Wiesner-Michael, Mike Stang, and Dan Conant, to name only a few. And I would also like to mention that Matt Parks and his team. Dennis, going into that Starbucks and being able to use your app and order, that's not an easy thing. So there's a lot of networking that needs to be done with that. I think we had people from IT working around the clock for 3 days trying to get that up and going. I think a lot of people don't really realize it, but my app works, so thank you. I'm sure there were many others across campus who helped in this collective effort. So to all of them, thank you. The efforts were right on target with the goal of enhancing student-facing amenities as a recruitment and retention tool. If you've not walked through the space yet, I strongly recommend that you do so. I took a video, posted on my Facebook page. I've showed it to a lot of alums, and I keep on getting the same thing. People can't believe that that's NIU, and they're just overjoyed with that. There's also more to come with Holmes. Students have been exploring the new lounges and are quickly gravitating to the organizations and student involvement suite. even though it doesn't officially open until next semester. Actually, I ran into a student last week. They didn't even know who I was, and they were bragging to me about the new home student center. And I asked, well, what'd you think? And I said, well, our only complaint is that now we go over there to study, and the place is so filled that we really got to get there early to gather, which I took that as good news. On Monday of this week, just in time for open house, the new Husky Den opened as a large bar and grill dining option. And come March, just across from the Husky Den, Home Student Center will open the Qdoba franchise. Everything will be fully staffed and operational by next spring. So thank you very much. Congratulations on that. A couple of other things. We've talked about our football team, but our cross country, our women's cross country team finished second in the MAC by 2 points. And that's a very close race for those of you that are familiar with that. Adrian Meyer told me he thought we'd be good next year. I think we're good this year. So great job on that. And I'd also like to thank my wife for making me turn on the TV back on last night after we got tied up. And Dean Peterson, if you're here, our walk-on linebacker, Nikki Ratine, I understand, is an engineering major, and he laid on top of that Toledo player for an extra second, which I think, there's a kid that was thinking.
Whatever
so,
it takes.
You got it. So we beat him with smart and brawn. So at this time, I'd like to recognize the members representing the University Advisory Committee that are present. Alex there, Jeffrey Royce, are the members representing FACFO, remaining names of the University Advisory Committee members, and anybody else that would like to speak. Kathy, Jason, if you're here, Kendall, any of you like to speak?
Yes, thank you, and good morning. I'd like to quickly congratulate the board for their vote on the faculty CBA earlier this morning, and I'm excited for the enhanced security and benefits it will provide for our incredible faculty members. I also quickly wanted to echo my counterpart Kathy's earlier comments and hope that those of us employees who are not covered by a collective bargaining agreement and fall noticeably behind in some areas, such as grievance procedures, merit pay, reasonable workloads, and so forth, can continue to work in good faith with the understanding that our administration and board will be open-minded to implementing some bridge to help fill that gap. With respect to the upcoming agenda for this committee, I love to see so many of the deferred maintenance projects and preventative maintenance needs building some much needed momentum. Roofs and envelopes and boilers may not exactly be glamorous, but I know our operating staff are extremely appreciative as more and more of those repairs and upgrades are executed. We certainly don't mind chasing leaks and malfunctions as part of what keeps us employed, but more so about the morale impact from having to explain or justify the deterioration to our students and guests. It sometimes seems like we complain a lot, but we are proud of our campus and we're really looking forward to these projects. And the recent shout outs you just had with regard to the HSC project, I wanted to include our executive director who's sitting in front of me, Jen Manning. She seemed to have been left out of a few applauded colleagues recently, but she took over the project midway through and I think has done a great job to help push it through. So I wanted to add her name to the list. Thank you.
Jen, I'm sorry about that. So thank you. Thank you for doing it. Thank you for your work. We very much appreciate it. Any other comments? Mr. Perry, have any members of the public registered a written request to address the board in accordance with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws?
Mr. Chair, we have no public comments today.
All right. At this point, I would like to ask Vice President and Chief Financial Officer Sarah McGill to present the University Financial Update. Vice President McGill will discuss the preliminary result for fiscal year 2019 year end, provide the first quarter update for fiscal year 2020, and brief the committee on the planned refinance of the Series 2010 to 2011 bonds. Sarah, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Wozowitz. We are making up. The last meeting, we did not have a financial update, so we are going to provide all the information today. We're going to start with the amended agenda, and we're going to start with the Series 2010-2011 bond reissuance update. I would like to invite Michael Boyer, President of Longhouse Capital Advisors, to the podium to join us for the conversation. Michael and his colleagues from Longhouse Capital have served as financial advisors to NIU since 2012. Michael has had a long history with NIU dating back to 2002. Michael was part of the team. He served as an underwriter for the original issuance of the 2010-2011 bonds. So he is very familiar with this item. Along with being familiar with our item, Michael also has knowledge of many of NIU's sister institutions' debt issuances. Other institutions have worked through similar refinancing items. NIU, along with Western, are some of the last institutions that are eligible to refinance our bonds, and Michael will touch on this a little bit later in his remarks. The purpose of today's discussion is to brief the committee on the opportunity to reissue the bonds, discuss our approach, market conditions, our partners that we'll need to execute the refinancing, as well as to provide an overview of our timeline. We ask for the board's feedback. The team, who has been led by our Associate Vice President for Finance and Treasury, Cherie Sannon, has done a lot of good work, and we need to make sure we have asked all the questions that will make us become more comfortable with supporting the set of plans before us. This discussion and the feedback from the committee will inform the action item we expect to move forward with at a future board date, seeking the board's approval to execute the refinance. A couple of guiding principles and some background information before I turn it over to Michael. NIU has approximately $175.5 million in outstanding Series 2010-2011 Auxiliary Facility System bonds. We refer to them as the AFS bonds. The average rate on the current debt is approximately 5.25%. And then both issuances will be refinanceable with tax-exempt bonds beginning January 1st, 2020. As we approach the refinance, we've adopted some guiding principles that are leading us in our strategy. First, the bond issue will not include any additional money for new projects. The new debt payments will not extend beyond the April 1st, 2041 maturity date. The refinancing will close in the first quarter of calendar year 20, so we can maximize on the expected interest savings. The refinancing will be structured to maximize savings in fiscal year 20 to 23 to mitigate budgetary impact of closing our structural budget gap. And we are going to take this opportunity to modernize our AFS documents. This gives us the opportunity to look at some of the items that guide our auxiliary network. We can think about things like taking out non-producing buildings, adding buildings at a future date that give us a little bit of operational flexibility. So that's a little bit of what is guiding our approach to the refinancing. Michael, if you can talk us through the market conditions and how we're approaching with our partners.
Sure. Thanks, Sarah. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Sarah's right. I worked on the two bond issues back in 2010 and 2011 that we're looking at potentially refinancing in the next couple of months. And frankly, we've been monitoring this for 10 years, but we really began to ramp things up in March of this past year when rates began to go down. And so many of us think about, you know, in these days, perfect storms, bad things where two or three things all come together at once. It's nice for a change to have whatever we would call it, serendipity, a perfect rainbow. I don't know what we call it, but it's, you know, three things have changed. One is that rates have definitely come down. Second is that NIU's credit story has stabilized and gotten better, especially in the way that the rating agencies view you. And third, we're approaching that first prepayment date of those bonds. And so all of those positive things have kind of come together at this time, and I think we're really at an exciting time where we can look at this. Sarah mentioned that the rates on the current bonds are about 5.25%. You know, we're seeing today rates, again, depending on where we are when we actually finish it, you know, they could be a percent below that or a percent and a half even. So there's definitely, you know, significant savings along those lines, and so we've moved into a process to be ready to take advantage of that. And that includes doing an RFP for bond underwriters. I'm happy to report that we're just about finished with that process. We ended up getting 12 proposals from a very diverse group of bond underwriters ranging from national firms, regional firms, minority firms, including veteran-owned ones, women-owned ones, minority-owned ones. I'll brag a little bit and say that that's almost twice as many as what Western received in its RFP process. And I think they were thoughtful responses as well. We asked them lots of questions about the best way to market these bonds, and I think we got good responses that we'll be able to use. Many of them had reviewed your enrollment plan and seen sort of what you've done to try to right the ship, and I think all of that work has really been helpful as we prepare to go out for the bonds. As Sarah mentioned, we're getting ready to make a report to the full board on December 5th. We'll have a resolution to give you then, I think, that specifies some parameters, some minimum amounts of savings and other things in order to go forward with this. But it's what I can say now is, again, not a perfect storm, a perfect positive experience right now. I'll warn you or just, you know, counsel you that rates on the bonds aren't fixed until we actually sell them, and those go up and down until we actually sell them, which we hope to do sometime in late January. But we're committed to getting this done as quickly as possible, but also smartly and with some forethought about the modernization issues for your system as well. Let me stop there and see if there are any questions. Yes.
I'm trying to understand the modernization issues.
Sure. So there's two or three different types. One has to do, when we look at what the other public universities have done, there are varying levels of, for instance, additional debt covenants that require you to have certain financial performance before you can borrow again, certain debt service coverage ratios and things. Ours are frankly much more conservative than any other college, and so it's good to be conservative, but you also want to give yourself some flexibility. And so I think what we would do is get more sort of to the middle range of what those are. And then, as Sarah mentioned, one of the things that all of the public universities, not only in Illinois but nationally, are considering now are opportunities to look at certain buildings, potentially enter into public-private partnerships that may result in getting funds up front and taking that building out of the system in order to do that. We want to make sure that whatever we're going forward with now allows us to do that under certain conservative assumptions. And right now they don't. It's just really hard to do that right now. And what's a great opportunity at this point is that we are refinancing all of those outstanding auxiliary facilities bonds. And so we have an opportunity, because those are going away, to start over with a new opportunity to sort of write our own ticket in these. Again, we're not going to do anything that's much different than what Southern or U of I is probably a good example, and they have examples of this kind of language in their documents. It's just we haven't done ours in 10 years and had an opportunity to do this where the others have. Does that make sense, sir?
And yeah. If I can just add, I think that the, you know, building on the perfect storm in a good way analogy, yeah, is we're thinking about our campus facilities master plan as well, by amending the documents at this time and taking advantage of the flexibility we have, we're setting ourselves up for less difficulties as we think about our campus facilities master plan and maybe executing on some of our goals and ambitions over the next 10 years or so.
Yeah, I'll note one twist, and again, this is not something that the other publics haven't done, University of Illinois in particular. We expect we're going to do a variable rate portion of this debt as part of the refinancing, likely a bank financing. And why are we thinking of doing that? Well, if you think about these bonds that we're going to refinance, we really only had a window after 10 years to refinance those. Now, when you take a building out or remove something from an auxiliary facility system because you've gotten a payment to do that, you're supposed to take that payment and refinance the bonds that are associated with that building and pay that off. If we have all fixed rate bonds, that's hard to do. If we have a portion of our debt is variable that can be paid off at any time, then it's easy to do. And so we're looking at having a fifth or so of this be variable rate debt, likely at a lower rate, but also just very flexible to prepay. And again, this is something that University of Illinois and other publics across the country are doing. Not the majority of your debt, just enough that we've got flexibility if we want to run these public-private partnerships and use some of the money to prepay our debt.
And it's important to say prepay without penalty.
Without penalty, that's right, exactly. That's right, which the fixed rate bonds don't typically have. You've got to wait 10 years to prepay them.
So, John, I think that, you know, as Montel and I sat in on the calls on this, you know, our big thing here was flexibility. Yeah. And I think, plus we just, it's been 10 years. So yeah. We should always be looking at this. This is good fiduciary responsibility that we're fulfilling here. But I think being flexible is probably the key word you want to focus on here. At least I did.
Well, and you said the fiduciary responsibility, and I think it's important to note, Michael hit on the interest rate reduction from a financial impact that could be somewhere between $20 and $27 million worth of savings,
right.
Just that rate to rate and a half. Yeah. So there's some a lot of great opportunity and some urgency to make sure we can capitalize on that, the lower rates, and really maximize the savings.
What's the impact to the current bondholders?
So they will be paid off as part of this refinancing. It's possible, in fact, probably likely, that some will sign on for the new bond issue. But okay. Yeah, they will get paid off.
Sure. I think there's a win-win across the board. I'd love to see us refinance this and save some dollars. I also wanted to emphasize for the audience too that you mentioned this in your presentation about the BEP, the Business Enterprise right. Program, folks that are participating. Matter of fact, I think it should be emphasized that all of our responses
yes.
have some form of participation. I said that has to be intentional. And,
it is.
And I commend Sarah and her team for making sure that type of commitment was placed in the RFP. Secondarily, now as we start to get the RFPs in and we begin to review these responses, let's make sure that the participation is substantive. It leads to capacity building as opposed to, you know, I'm throwing a bone and
yeah.
you know, a pass through kind of service. So I commend you for at least for that participation.
Yeah. And I'll note that back in 2010 and 2011, when you did the bonds, we're looking at refinancing, you did the same thing. You had minority firm participation and it was meaningful. So this is keeping up with that tradition.
And for those of you that don't know, BEP is Business Enterprise Program, or we look at minorities.
Minority and female. Yep.
Minority
and
women, female. Veterans, and persons yeah. with
yes.
disability, as well as small
yes.
businesses.
Yes, yes.
Meaty weeby. Any other questions? Michael, thank
Great.
You.
Thank you.
Soldier on. Thank you.
Thank you for the thoughtful comments and feedback, and we'll return at a future meeting date to seek formal approval and to move forward with the refinance. We are going to go to the 2019 year-end results.
Can I just make one other comment about that? Just in terms of everything that's gone on here, this last presentation, it's Sarah, Cherie, and their team. The committee appreciates the discipline and stewardship that you're doing in this area to take on new debt or extend payment terms. So you know, we'll look at this. Will come up again in December, but thank you very much for your time and your diligence.
Thank you. All right. So now we're looking at the original information item 7A, which is now 7B, which is the annual financial summary for fiscal year 2019 and budget to gap reconciliation. And if we want to go to page 8, I think that shows the financial chart. So the university ended fiscal year 19 with total revenues of $408.9 million and expenses of $408.2 million, resulting in a positive budget performance of about $644,000. So we had a balanced budget. We met our target. Although total revenues were $16 million less than the budget for fiscal 19, the university managed expenses to meet and align the expenses with the revenue received, so demonstrated a good financial discipline. Contributing to the revenue shortfall were variances in tuition and student fees, variances in gifts, grants, and contracts, rental and room income, and gate receipts and commissions. Last year, we started to talk about this year is our first year of a multi-year planning and budget process with the goal of more accurately projecting revenue and more specifically to align tuition and fee revenue with enrollment targets. We'll talk about this more as we look at quarter one. This will address some of that variation that we saw in fiscal 19. We continue to work to progress our forecasting capabilities and expect to improve our accuracy with this new methodology. With thoughtful coordination across campus, strategies were deployed mid-year to align the university's expenses with the revenue received. We are satisfied that even with revenue being down, we were able to make progress and advance initiatives in support of the strategic enrollment management plan and facilities needs. And we continue to develop strategies that control expenses as well as increase our revenue. I'm happy to take any questions in support of the FY19 budget results. Right. So this on the scholarship, we were down in expenses, and that's likely attributed to let me back up. I'm sorry. So we when we look at our financial aid, we see it both on the revenue side and the expense side. So we see tuition and student fees, and then we typically also have the scholarship component in the revenue. And as we have a variation in the tuition and fees, typically with thinking about our enrollment targets and where those came in, if we were down a little bit in what we projected in enrollment, we typically don't award as many scholarships, so we would see a savings or we would not realize the full expense in that scholarship line.
I have a question.
Yes.
So in this particular case, what are we voting on?
This is just an information item.
It says action, but it's
information. Oh, because it says action.
Yes.
No, that was my apologies. I should have stated that. It's an information item. It was incorrectly listed.
Can I, Dennis?
On the gap reconciliation, it's showing that we had a decrease in our net position of $26 million. So currently our net position as of June 30th of this year was $165 million. Did that meet expectations? I mean, was that what we forecasted was going to happen?
No. So if we could move to page 9, which gets to that budget to gap reconciliation. So we focus on the budget numbers, which are going to be slightly different than what you would see on our financial statements, which is why we produce this budget to gap reconciliation. We expected to see a change in net position that would have been closer to maybe $17 to $20 million. And that's typically when you look at that depreciation in debt principal expense, when you look at that difference. We're anticipating the year end to be around $17 million just for those two items. And that number won't be final until our audit is issued in the early part of calendar year. But right now, we're looking at about $17 million. You see reference to two one-time adjustments, one for student account receivables and one for construction in progress. Those were unanticipated entries that when we did our initial forecasts, We didn't expect to have those one-time adjustments. A little bit of background of why we made those adjustments. We have methodology in support of both of those items. The student account receivables is based on looking at enrollment, looking at tuition charges, looking at repayment strategies. Construction in progress has a different set of methodologies. But suffice to say, for both of those, we have not had an opportunity to really review the assumptions that base the number that we hold in that account or how we budget that account. And you may recall at an earlier meeting, we talked about staffing that had happened in our financial team. For the first time since I've been here, so almost 2 years, we're fully staffed on our finance and reporting side. We have an AVP, we have a controller, we have an assistant controller. And as we become fully staffed, it's allowed us to spend some time looking at our financial reporting. And that's really allowed us to look at those assumptions that base these numbers. And it's through looking at those assumptions that we realized our methodology had fallen behind. So we made those one-time adjustments to position us this year. I'd like to say that in past years, typically we find these adjustments because of audit findings. So we are told by auditors that we are not keeping up, and the auditors say you have to make these adjustments. So while we would prefer not to see them in some way, us recognizing them in the reconciliation and the reporting analysis is a step in the right direction, because we're saying, we're noting this problem, we're going to take these adjustments. We need to go one step further now and apply what we learned into our operational practices so that we're not realizing these adjustments, rather we're accounting for those in our normal business.
Can you give an example of what one of the changes was in the methodology on the accounts receivable? I mean, what did we find that we like, oh, gosh, we're doing that wrong? Or,
you know, one that I think is an easy one and consistent with things we talk about is enrollment. So as we think about our former methodology, right, we had a larger number of students that were contributing to our accounts receivable just because there was a larger base. That base isn't there any longer, so we have to account for different tuition levels and a different number of students. Sheree, Jason, anything that I'm missing that is relevant to add?
So I'll just add, for the accounts receivable, the issue there, we did receive an audit finding a couple years ago. The issue there was that the methodology we were using was about 10 years old. And so as receivables aged and were not paid, we were not allowing enough reserve on our balance sheet for the bad debt. And so the last couple years, we began to look at the changes in the industry, the changes in the payment collection rate, and came up with a reasonable methodology to now assess as receivables age, what's a reasonable amount to set aside for uncollectible receivables. And so the auditors have looked at this. As Sarah mentioned, it's not final, but we have recognized and implemented this methodology, and so far they have accepted it. Is that right, Jason?
I'm happy to hear that, because when I first joined the board 3 years ago, that was one of the areas that I flagged on the financials. It looked like that number was a number we hadn't paid a whole lot of attention to. So I'm glad to see that we've taken, you know, the hit that we need to take, but it's the right thing to do, so.
Yeah, and for the construction of progress, the issue there was establishing or reestablishing communication with our facilities folks and the financial reporting area. We had a series of projects that had been sitting in on the balance sheet for several years, but we hadn't really reconciled the status of those projects, if they were complete. And we noticed that there were some items sitting in assets that really should have been expensed. And so we were able to make that adjustment this year.
It's nice to be fully staffed that we can pay attention to these things now.
Be proactive.
Very happy to have the team in place.
You know, and just one other thing, Dennis, in regards to some of your, all the questions here actually is that, you know, this is, these are not hits to cash, this is more hits to book, so book versus cash, so. But these are things that we needed to get tidied up and get in line, so.
Sure.
Any other questions?
Just a comment, I'm not sure that there's other opportunities to say this, but reflected in this relationship between revenue and expenses is a lot of pain and a lot of work on the part of a number of people throughout the university and sacrificing things that were important to them and the loss of programs that they thought were vital in some cases. But I think I speak for the whole board when I say how much we appreciate the hard work and you know, the resolve of the institution to participate in this kind of savings.
All right, we're going to move on to the next item. Again, this is an information item, the quarterly financial summary, fiscal year 2020 first quarter. So we're not looking for any type of vote. This is briefing the board on our Q1 results. And if actually, if you could go to the next page 12, that'll get the financials up. Yeah. So the university has prepared a first quarter financial summary. As a reminder, fiscal year 20 is the first year of a transition to a multi-year planning and budget model. We have articulated NIU's financial capacity to align and execute institutional priorities. This transition allows university leadership to serve in our fiduciary stewardship role and to assess not only financial and other risks, but to do so mindful of the powerful set of opportunities before us to ensure the sustainability and success of NIU for generations to come. As of the end of first quarter of fiscal year 20, so I'm going to focus on that first set of number columns on the left. At the end of first quarter of fiscal 20, the university recorded a positive performance of approximately $70 million. Although this is a slight increase over the prior year, the university is ending first quarter $983,000 worse than budget. So we're about $1 million behind where we would like to be for first quarter. University tuition and student fee revenues have decreased by approximately $2.9 million from the prior year, and this is in line with the enrollment expectations of the university's strategic enrollment management plan. Other revenues for first quarter FY20 are tracking in line with budgeted targets, and we expect to end the year in line with the budget. On the expense side, we see that expenses for the quarter lagged budget by approximately $3.2 million, contributing to a full year projection, and this goes to the column most on the right, contributing to a full year projection below budget spending by about $8.7 million. In total, this contributes then to the first quarter net results being about $983,000 worse than budget. Based on those current projections, if the performance would continue as it is, the university would end the year with a negative net revenue of $5.9 million. That's about $760,000 worse than the board-approved budget. And this, again, is if no additional actions are taken to align expenses with revenues. I want to be clear that the university is committed to ending the year aligned with the board-approved budgets, and efforts are underway to align expenses with expected revenues. We're supporting this through a variety of budget management models, specifically a transition to local control that will happen before the end of the year, and that will allow us to make the necessary adjustments to align expenses with revenues.
And that's a big deal for us to do that. I think to get the local control on that. Also, I had a question for you on the debt service.
Yes.
So, if your eyes are good enough and you can see up at that screen, I can look here and see that, you know, we're over on the expense there of about $1.4 million on that. Is that, so with what we're doing with our bonds, will that make a a difference there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I should clarify that the savings that we spoke about in the earlier item are not yet factored into these projections. Okay. And that was intentional because we want to see, obviously, where the year ends, and we want to make sure that we can close the bond issuance. The numbers you're seeing here, we believe that right now this is just a timing difference. There's not been a structural change that would cause an acceleration or increase in our payments from prior year. So we expect that if the bond refinance doesn't happen, our current numbers would normalize. It's likely with the reissuance or the refinance that we would see a change to these numbers mid-year, and we would explain
that
to the board.
Which would help us close that gap.
Yeah, that's the thought.
Yes, Rita.
Sarah, could you just, for my own knowledge, when you talk about local control, can you explain what that means?
Sure. So and I'm going to echo something Dean Ellis-Piper mentioned in her report. Much like in a university life cycle, you have policies and procedures in place that were caused by decisions or events that predated you. So we're finding that many of the policies and procedures we have in place from a financial management standpoint really arose due to the budget impasse. And we're somewhat centrally governed when it comes to budgets. So a lot of the decisions really end up bubbling up to kind of a central level. What we'd like to do, what we're committed to doing in January this year, is taking a first step to what we're calling local control, which is providing our divisions and colleges with more direct control and responsibility over their area budgets. So they would have the ability to make decisions and to support university priorities, knowing what their set financial targets are.
Maybe I'll just add a little to that. In the 700 days without a budget, it was very important to us to continue to maintain programs and people and to be able to front map money to our students. And so to ensure that we were able to do that, we put mechanisms in place. So an example of where local control was lost during the budget impasse is we put automatic clawback of vacated position dollars in place during the budget impasse so that we were very aware of where our cash balances were at all times. But we think that we will have a much better result with local decision-making about how to live within budget parameters. So some of those things that were put in place to get us through an unprecedented time are no longer needed and, in fact, not helping the university at this point. So we're going to relieve those.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
All right, thank you. On the following page, we're looking at our budget to gap reconciliation. This goes to our earlier conversation. Right now, it's anticipated that the only adjusting entry we would see that would change from as we think about our budget performance to what we would see on our financial statements would be that reconciliation of our depreciation and debt principal. And as we look ahead to the end of fiscal 20, we expect that the reconciliation of those items would lead to a $23 million change in our net position. Again, these are just estimated, and we will continue to show and reflect those numbers when we present those quarterly updates. And I believe that concludes then the informational items. So move ahead to the action items then.
Let's go.
All right. We have with us leading off the action items, what we call our pricing items. And we have items to start with. Agenda item 8A, fiscal year 21 undergraduate tuition pricing recommendation. This item presents the pricing recommendation that addresses NIU's tuition rates for fiscal year 21. These recommendations were developed with the goals of addressing affordability concerns and maintaining fiscal responsibility by keeping the total cost of attendance for full-time students as low as possible. The recommendation for tuition, undergraduate tuition, is to hold base tuition flat in fiscal 21 for the fifth year in a row. There will be no change to the differential tuition rates. And at this time, the university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 5th, 2019.
Do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second. We have a second? We have a second. Discussion. Dennis?
In these days, as was mentioned before, where our state still exports a high number of high school graduates to other states to go on to school, I think it's important that we do everything we can to remain competitive in keeping students in state and recruiting students to our state. So I really commend Dr. Freeman and her team for keeping tuition flat. I think that's important to our success. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'd like to piggyback on that and say that it's also equally as important for those students that are going to school now that are dependent upon a certain flat tuition rate. I tell you, this is a godsend for a lot of those kids that can continue on to go to school. So again, my kudos to the president for her work here.
And I think we're held to that once you come
within
as a freshman.
Within tuition, nine semesters.
You have to God bless you. That,
yeah. But not all our students finish in nine
yes.
semesters.
Yeah. So. Any other discussion? We can call this to a vote. All those in favor of the recommendation for the general fee pricing and holding the line on that, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion carries.
All right, we're going to move to agenda item 8B, fiscal year 2021 general fee pricing recommendations. The following item presents a pricing recommendation that addresses NIU's general fees for fiscal 21. These recommendations were developed with the goals of addressing affordability concerns and maintaining fiscal responsibility by keeping the total cost of attendance for full-time students as low as possible. The recommendations for fees include the introduction of an arts and culture fee, and we're accommodating that introduction of a new fee while decreasing the overall fee rate, $3.67 per credit hour from fiscal 20 to fiscal 21. This will be our third year of decreasing fees. And at this time, the university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 5th, 2019.
Do I hear a motion to approve this agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion. Dennis?
Well, again, along the same theme as I had before, I'm very pleased to see this action. In particular, I want to bring notice to something that was brought up before relative to the arts and culture fee. I'm very happy to see us include that fee now into this to encourage and allow our students to take advantage of the tremendous arts and culture activities that we have on our campus, and to be able to do that free of charge now that it's a part of the student fee. So again, congratulations on that. I think that's a great step for us.
Dean, sorry, I was just gonna say Dean Castle advocated strongly for that, so kudos to him.
Good job.
He's in.
Oh, our only
team
yes. And our only golfing dean.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, yeah, plays golf. So, Trustee Butler.
Oh, I don't have
I really want to hear your comments about the culture and our arts and culture fee, because I'm sure we've talked about this many times. Give me some feel.
I don't have any comments about it. I think it's wonderful. I'm very excited about it. I think it's really smart, and it should energize a aspect of our university that benefits everyone.
President Freeman?
I just want to point out that we've come before the board previously and before audiences like this to say that relationships are resources and to point out that partnerships, such as the one with Northwestern Medicine for our health services and the one with the city of DeKalb to consolidate and improve bus service, would save the university money. And the reduced fees we're bringing forward today actually realize that potential. And I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you. Great point. Any other discussion? We'll call the question. All those in favor of the fee structure recommendation signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
All right. Agenda item 8C, fiscal year 2021 room and board fee recommendation. The following item presents a pricing recommendation that addresses NIU's room and board fees for fiscal year 2021. The university is recommending that room and board rates remain consistent to fiscal year 20 with the following exceptions: an increase to the Neptune complex rates, that increases 1.3%, a reduction to the Stevenson complex rates, that reduction is 1%, and a change in the dining meal plan structure. Please note that we list the rates for Newhall and Northern View. That's listed on that following page. These rates are set with the Collegiate Housing Foundation project. They're considered separately and approved under that CHF agreement. We included those rates for transparency, but we are not asking for the committee to approve or make a recommendation on those items. And as we think about the recommendation, we're asking that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 5th, 2019.
I'd like to hear a motion for this.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, we will call the question for the room and board fees. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, our final pricing item is agenda item 8D, fiscal year 2021 graduate and law tuition pricing recommendation. This item presents the pricing recommendation that addresses NIU's tuition rates in support of graduate and law school, graduate and law degrees for fiscal year 2021. Consistent with our values, these recommendations were developed with the goals of addressing affordability concerns and maintaining fiscal responsibility by keeping the total cost of attendance for full-time students as low as possible. These recommendations hold base tuition flat in fiscal 21, again for the fifth year in a row, while making modest adjustments to differential tuition rates in the College of Health and Human Services and College of Education. Excuse me, Health and Human Sciences and the College of Education. Note that we have included the student fee information. This is consistent with what was approved previously, but it's included in this item for your reference. And at this time, the university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 5th, 2019.
Is there a motion?
Move.
To approve this. Second? Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Discussion. Hearing none, we'll call the question. All those in favor of the recommendation for the graduate in law pricing recommendation signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I just hope we get some positive press out of keeping these rates flat across the board. It shows that we have a commitment to access to education. It'd be great to see that in the paper.
So, can we do something about that? Get some positive press?
Yeah.
You work on that?
I see Joe King in the second.
Joe King? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Thank you. All right. Agenda item 8E, Student Success Collaborative and Academic Performance Solutions. The university is requesting approval to purchase membership in the Educational Advisory Board Student Success Collaborative and Academic Performance Solutions. These programs provide access to best practice research, data analytics, and technology platforms that support student retention efforts and resource allocation decisions. The cost for these services is approximately $1.2 million over 5 years. And at this time, the Board of Trustees approval is requested to enter into a five-year contract for membership in EAB's Student Success Collaborative and Academic Performance Solutions. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting December 5th, 2019.
Do I hear a motion for approval? We have a motion and we have a second. Is there a discussion? Yes, Dennis.
Can somebody, I'm not quite sure I understand, even though I've read this a couple of times, I'm still kind of trying to wrap my arms around what this is and what it does for us.
Sure. So we're, EAB has been a partner to NIU, and we work with them across a variety of different technology platforms and enrollment. They also provide some marketing and recruitment support.
So EAB is a company?
EAB is a vendor. It's a vendor partner, if you would say. We have had a relationship with them. The Student Success Collaborative is an existing product. It undergirds our current technology platform, Navigate.
It's a student success management system. We are able to work with them to share data, get analytics, and I think you can remember going back even before you were on the board, we've spoken a lot about the importance of having our advising combine high tech mm-hmm. and high touch, mm-hmm. and this is what gives us the high tech okay. piece that allows us okay. to identify the students where intervention will benefit them most.
So we have one technology platform that's existing, and we would like to extend the contract to be able to continue offering that service, and that's the Navigate product that the president just spoke to. In addition, we'd like to expand our data analytics capability as we are committed to making good data-informed decisions, and we are looking at purchasing another platform through EAB, the Academic Performance Solutions. APS, as it's known, utilizes data and best practice research to help academic leaders to get information about class size, class enrollment, class utilization. Our provost has been a big proponent of this platform and really about, not specifically this platform, but providing a tool to our academic leaders so that they can understand enrollment patterns and make decisions. And this platform would provide that functionality and allow us to really leverage our existing relationship with EAB and some of those data feeds we already have in place.
And I guess the one thing I would add to that is, in a way, this would give us the data and benchmarking that we recognize we needed as we embarked and went through the program prioritization process. So it's a logical follow-on to support data-informed decision-making.
So I assume that this product is managed under the provost's office?
Yes, it'll be a joint effort, though, because it combines finance, HR, and student information data.
From a technology standpoint, do we have all the right technology on the campus in order to use this product, or is there additional technology required that we don't have today?
No, I believe we do. We had a technical phone call with EAB probably a month ago to make sure that we had the technical specifications in place, and we do.
I have a question. So this sounds great, but the technology is the technology, the tool for collaboration. So are we ready from like a systems, not technology, but a people systems, you know.
Change management.
Change management, right, in order to really employ and use the technology and use it the way in a way that we'll be able to see the best outcomes. The advantage of EAB as a partner is that they not only provide the platform, but they also provide a lot of onboarding support and a lot of change management support to help us develop case studies, to help us work with the deans, the chairs, and other people on campus to use the data in ways that help us make decisions. So I've been through this process before, and actually Sarah has too at another university, and they're very good at making sure that we have the processes in place to use what they provide to us. It's not a, here's your data. Usually they come in with actual advice on where we might look to make strategic changes after they've looked at our data as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One other question.
Yes.
I take it this tool is universally used across the nation as opposed to, are there competition or competitive tools in this area? Or?
Can I answer that? I mean, this is actually, will give us some benchmarking data as well, but it is used by hundreds of universities across the United States, and we'll be able to develop a peer group so we can actually benchmark some of our student class size information or cost data against other similar universities.
Both the provost and I have used it at previous institutions, and it was considered a best practice.
Okay. Is it reasonable to try to quantify the value of what we're going to be gaining from this to see if it really pays for the investment we're making?
So a specific ROI, I'm sure we could calculate. I'd be hard-pressed to do it in this moment. I would say that it contributes, as we step back and think about our multi-year planning efforts, that this having good data-informed decisions contributes to our ability to think about our services, how we offer them, how we're making best use of our people, our facilities. And this is not an area that we have a lot of visibility into now. And this tool is going to allow us to think about our classes, our utilization, our offerings in a different way. So I think that it will give us that ROI. Maybe if you give us a little bit, we can figure out how to quantify that. But I think it's essential in helping us to think about how we think about our strategic enrollment targets, how we think about our on-campus resources and our people, and how to best put those together to make sure that we're recruiting and retaining our students in the right ways.
One other question. Can you speak to why we're in a five-year or type of agreement versus a three or two?
Yeah, so it's the setup for the new platform. It really takes about 18 to 24 months to get that new platform in place. So we wanted to ensure that we were able to set up the platform and allow the appropriate adoption time on campus.
Okay. Change management.
Yes. So mindful of the board's caution to think about the right duration of contracts. So we didn't go a 10-year, right? So we tried to think a 5-year would give us time to think about the right launch of the platform, the right adoption, and then not lock us in too long so we can stay competitive in the bid process.
We need to get data in so we can get information out later on. So I think that's the key there. Veronica, I thought insightful question there. Mm-hmm. From a technology standpoint, that's right. Always the biggest issue.
You mean people the question pop. I couldn't articulate?
Yeah. I got it. We're on the same wavelength here. Yeah, but I mean, I just think there's a lot of technologies that get put in and people just don't know how to use it, and therefore they think the technology is bad. Well, it's not the technology, it's the usage of the technology.
Right, or that the technology is going to improve retention rates.
Yeah.
It's not the technology.
And important, Mr. Chair, it's also getting good data in.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, exactly. Everybody talks about AI, and AI is worthless if your data is bad. So, anyway, any other discussion? All those in favor of the recommendation signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Agenda item 8F, Home Student Center Tower Elevator Upgrades, Capital Project Approval. The Home Student Center has three elevators on the west side of the building that service all levels of the 16-story tower portion of the building. These elevators are heavily used for hotel and conference room access. They have been in service for 52 years since the addition to the building opened in 1967 and require significant component upgrades to improve overall reliability. The cost of the three elevators is expected to be $1.5 million. We are requesting Board of Trustees approval to proceed with this project that will include all necessary in-house efforts and contracts with external contractors and suppliers to complete the work. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 5th, 2019.
Do I hear a motion
for approval?
Yes, thank you.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion on our $1.5 million elevator?
Yes. When will these repairs be made?
We expect them to be made this academic year.
Okay. I should say this afternoon.
as soon as we have board approval, John and his team will be executing.
Very good.
You may want to hold a special meeting right after this. Prove it.
Any other discussion? We will call the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Agenda item 8G, Burma Art Collection Compact Storage Capital Project Approval. The Center for Burma Studies curates, archives, and displays a unique collection of 2,870 art objects donated over the past three decades. A grant from the Department of Education Institute of Museums and Library Sciences has been awarded to the center to improve the storage accommodations for this collection. This project will relocate the collection from Swin Parson to a space in the Founders Memorial Library housing a compact storage shelving system. This project will utilize grant funding for the purchase of the storage system and will be augmented with NIU funds to accommodate the installation and related space accommodations. The overall effort will not only better accommodate the storage for preservation requirements, but will also improve the accessibility for students, faculty, and international scholars to utilize the collection and will provide training and learning opportunities. At this time, Board of Trustees approval is requested to proceed with this project that includes all necessary in-house efforts and contracts with external contractors and suppliers to complete the work. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 5th, 2019.
Do I hear a motion for approval?
So moved.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion.
Why is this coming to the board?
Jen?
You can answer Dennis's question first.
You just, your hand was up first. So
I know, but it's
okay. So the total cost is $350,000.
The majority of it is coming from a grant.
Right, but the grant flow-throughs.
Oh, flow-throughs. Okay.
Yeah, so because the flow-through, the grant is coming to the university, and then the university's paying the expenses, we need the board approval.
John?
So is there any concern about the sort of the continual repurposing of the library for purposes that may not be library in nature? I mean, I'm okay with this. I'm just wondering, is there anything about this trend that...
I believe Dr. Blasey.
Dr. Blasey.
So that particular space is in one of the lower basements and right now is already housing some of our student art collection. And one of the benefits of this new compact storage was we will also be picking up the student art collection and housing that in a more professional and safe manner. Other parts of that space are right now just, I believe, a carpentry shop, and it's just being used to store materials and supplies. So I think it's actually a better retasking of the space. More in line with the mission of the university, and particularly the library.
Any other discussion? I'm always amazed at how this is, you know, Southeast Asian studies and art is a big thing for us. It's always amazed by that. Well, we'll call the question then. All those in favor of the Burma Art Collection Compact Storage Capital Project, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, agenda item 8H, fiscal year 2020 to 2024 fire services agreement with the City of DeKalb. The current agreements for unplanned fire protection and ambulance services, as well as planned ambulance event support with the City of DeKalb, expires on December 31st, 2019. In June 2019, the board approved a six-month extension on the five-year general fire services agreement to allow additional time for both the city and NIU to determine a reasonable cost-share strategy for this important emergency services support. After a series of discussions with the city and researching other municipal university arrangements, a five-year agreement for approximately $4.9 million is considered a reasonable cost-share. The agreement will include a maximum $50,000 provision for the university's proportional share of possible major equipment purchases and a $125,000 annual allowance for planned ambulance support at university events. The total of the contract, again, is $4.9 million. And we are asking for Board of Trustee approval to enter into a five-year agreement for a total value not to exceed $4.9 million. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 5th, 2019.
Do I hear a motion for approval of the Fire Services Agreement with the City of DeKalb?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Discussion.
We expect that it will. Originally, the planned event ambulance support had been handled under separate contracts and had not been rolled into the master agreement. And as we took the board's follow-up from the June discussion, we really looked at how to capture the full range of services. As we look back since fiscal 15, the highest spend in ambulance support had been about $96,000. So we feel the $125,000 annually is a good number. It's not a number we would spend if we didn't need it. I want to make that point clear, but it should give us the operational, it's a not to exceed. I think that's a good way to put it. It should give us the operational flexibility annually to be able to provide the coverage we need for campus.
Mr. Chairman, I also like to say thank you to Sarah, because this is one of the first things that we talked about when I came on the board, was whether we were getting a good deal from the city for these services. And it seems like the way you've broken this down, we've got some great transparency, and it seems fair.
I have to commend John Heckman for his leadership. He really has served as point for working with the city. We appreciate the board's challenge in June to really think about how to quantify the relationship. And it was because of that discussion that we really looked at the university's share of emergency responses. And then based on that share, we did the proportionate cost share. So thank you to John Heckman and thank you to the board.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, we'll call the question. For the everyone in favor of the fire services agreement with the City of DeKalb, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
I think we are on our final action item, 8I, Internal Audit Department Charter. The Chief Audit Executive must periodically review the Internal Audit Charter and present it to senior management and the board for approval. The Internal Audit Charter, it's on page 35 of the materials, was last reviewed and approved by the Board of Trustees in 2016. After this year's comprehensive review of the charter, the internal audit director has made changes which include formatting and minor content revisions. And at this time, the university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee approve the internal audit charter and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 5th, 2019.
So I hear a motion for the internal audit department charter approval.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Discussion.
Who is the chief audit executive?
Danielle Schultz.
Oh, okay. So I didn't know that was the title that we had. Great.
Any other discussion?
No.
Okay. We'll call the question then. All those in favor of the internal audit department charter recommendation signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Anything else, Sarah?
We have five university reports, agenda items 9A through 9E. These are not action items, they are information items. We're providing these five informational items in the university reports section. We have included comprehensive write-ups for the committee's reference, included our quarterly reports in support of the fiscal year 20 first quarter transactions in excess of 100,000. These are a summary of transactions between 100,000 and the board approval limit of 249,999,000. We also have a write-up for fiscal year 20, the first quarter report on investments, which is a summary of our investment portfolio and earnings. We have three annual reports, annual report for fiscal 19 of transactions involving real property. These are reports on our leases, both properties we lease. We serve as lessees and lessors. A fiscal year 19 report on facilities and infrastructure, and a fiscal year 19 internal audit update that summarizes the planned internal audit communications with senior leadership and the Board of Trustees. We don't have any planned discussion for these items because there are comprehensive write-ups included. However, if there are any questions on those items, we're happy to respond to those.
Any questions? I'll give everybody just a little bit of time in case you didn't have a chance to go through it, just to look a little bit. I was curious as to how Trevor Noah did.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at right there.
So, did anybody go? And it was flow through for us, but.
I do not have that information.
Okay.
Who was Trevor Noah?
Oh my God. He doesn't know who Trevor Noah is. All right.
I was there. It was
he played for
show.
The Cubs?
No. He does a night show. He's a comedian. South African, I believe. So,
did you want to ask about the ice?
Showing your age, Dennis. Any other questions? Have you a chance to look at that? Okay, I'm not hearing of any questions. You know, I'd like to acknowledge President Freeman and Provost Ingram for their recommendation to keep tuition flat and just recognizing the affordability issues that we have, not only here, but, you know, for the entire state of Illinois, that we really need to hold the line on things. So I commend you and thank you very much for all of your hard work, Sarah, as well. So with that, are there any other matters to come before this committee? Hearing none, I want to let you know that the next regular meeting of this committee will be February 13th. Hopefully it's a little bit warmer by February.
That's what meteorology is telling us.
Yeah. February, what happened to global warming? Will be February 13th, 2020. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The meeting is adjourned.